When I was at the Texas Tribune Festival in Austin last week, I moderated two sessions, one with reporters that we've already posted, and one with a couple of U.S. representatives from Texas, Democrat Beto O'Rourke of El Paso and Republican Will Hurd of Helotes. The two, who didn't much know each other a year ago, made headlines in their state when, stranded by a snowstorm, they found themselves sharing a rented Chevy Impala for the 1,600-mile drive from San Antonio to Washington. They know each other now. Anyway, I asked them roughly the same question I asked the reporters. How do the constant attacks by the president on journalism, on facts, influence how you do your job? How you deal with the press? Does it affect your point of view? This session starts with Beto O'Rourke, and then Will Hurd jumps in.
I begin by saying that I feel like our democracy, this country, is under the most extraordinary pressure test, not just of our lifetimes, but perhaps since the Civil War. And that our institutions, you know, the courts, the Congress, the ballot box, but also the press, are going to determine whether we're going to be able to keep going for a 231st year, and whether we'll be talking about this at the 330th anniversary, as we've just celebrated the 230th anniversary of the signing of the Constitution. I have been in so many secret briefings and classified hearings, but in many cases have learned more by reading the New York Times and the Washington Post about what's going on at the highest levels of our government. If we don't have a free, independent press, we will not have a democracy. And we know exactly where this is going. When someone who says he wants to ban all people of a certain religion from coming to this country, when he vilifies Mexican immigrants as rapists and criminals, when he attacks the press as the enemy of the people, there's only one direction that he wants to take this country. And we have to decide whether we are the men and women of the moment, and if we're going to be up to this test. And I think we are. And I think perhaps it took Donald Trump and this moment to bring out the very best of us. But I am deeply concerned about what I hear and what's going on in this country right now.
The press is important to our country, to our society. The competition of ideas is what has made this experiment called America work, right? But as someone who gets attacked and criticized and yelled at and cyberbullied dozens of times a day, right? Sometimes you have to ignore that. And so your question is, how have these attacks on the press changed my behavior?
Mm-hmm.
It hasn't, right? I'm gonna continue to be honest, tell people what I'm doing, why I'm doing it. I'm gonna continue to try to get a particular message out. You also can't take the bait. You're also assuming that because one person said the news is fake, that means everybody else is going to believe that and agree with that. That's not the case.
So we shouldn't sell the public short.
Exactly, 100%.
Yeah, because the public is so balkanized right now,
right.
We might not know people.
But also, so here's what I love about the sports media. When they make a bet on whether my Texas Aggies are going to win or lose this weekend, whoop, Giggum Aggies, the next week, that was out there. And people look and say, okay, did you say the Aggies were going to win by two touchdowns or not? They didn't. What's wrong? Right? So we have to accept when you make a wrong call, you make a wrong call. And so get better at it. As a professional intelligence officer, right, this was my job for 9.5 years. I was the dude in the back alleys at 4 o'clock in the morning collecting intelligence on threats to our homeland.
Where were you?
I was 2 years in what I used to call the super secret CIA training facility called The Farm, but now it's on Google Maps. then I did 2 years in India, 2 years in Pakistan, 2 years in New York City, mm-hmm. then a year and a half in Afghanistan.
I love the fact that you brought up the pundits, because we've spent a lot of time on that issue on the show, and it turns out that accuracy has absolutely nothing to do with how much airtime they get. In fact, it's inversely proportional. It's certainty. If you hedge your bets, they don't get asked back because they're dull. So this is purely about entertainment. Pundits, for the most part, they're brought on the basis of the drama they generate and not at all the insight that they cast. But I just wonder, have either of you ever been tempted to say, I don't have to talk to that news outlet because nobody believes them anyway. Because we've heard about this on the local level quite a lot. Mayors will say, I'm not going to talk to the press because it's all fake news. Boom, end of conversation. Ever had that impulse?
I have not.
It's yeah. You're national legislators, not local mayors, so you may not even have that option. Yeah. But
you know someone who's going to have a slant, for example. I've been pretty firm on record of saying I think building a wall from sea to shining sea is the most expensive and least effective way to do border security. Mm-hmm. Right? Yeah, we can clap for that. I've been very clear on that, and I've talked about it since actually 2009. And you still have some journalists that when they come in the district and interview people, you know, they may talk to 10 people, but they find the one person that says, you know, here in this district, we want a wall. It's one guy, and everybody knows it's that one guy. And yet, they try to...
They stick to the narrative.
They stick to the narrative. So that is ultimately, if there is an erosion of trust in some of our reporting, it's because there is a narrative that people are trying to push. And I would say that that goes for wherever you are on the ideological divide.
So I think we can all agree that the media are frequently wrong. And
Can you repeat that? I couldn't hear that.
And I think we can agree, as the panel of journalists said, that it'd be a lot better to be upfront about it, about your mistakes and about your process. Do you think the media are better as a result of these attacks or not? Beto?
Yeah, thanks. Let me tell you an anecdote. I don't know if is Bob Moore still in here? So Bob Moore's not here. He's the editor of the El Paso Times. And when El Paso was in the grips of a public corruption ring at the school districts, in the county courthouse, in the positions of public trust that were going to determine the future of our community, it was Bob Moore and the El Paso Times and the reporters that worked under him that helped to uncover that, to hold people accountable and to make El Paso a better community. And but for his leadership and what he was willing to do and the editorials that he wrote that were based on the facts that they uncovered, we might still have that corruption in the county courthouse and in the school districts and in public life in El Paso today. So do some people get it wrong? Absolutely. And should they be held accountable for it? Certainly. But I think the press plays such a critical role in the improvement of our country, of our communities. And I'm really concerned, and I don't hear that same concern perhaps from others right now, that when you've got somebody who vilifies the press as the enemy of the people, or who on the face of any report coming from a specific news organization calls it fake news, or has that news organization characterized as a person being run over by a train or demolished at the side of a professional wrestling forum, that very important role that the press plays is compromised, and it could lead to it becoming open season on members of the press, or just that institution being distrusted going forward, and that would be incredibly tragic for this country. So I hear you. Yeah, sometimes people screw up, and yeah, there's some people I'd rather not talk to, but I always do because I feel accountable and I want to be responsive to the people that I represent or the people that I want to serve in the state of Texas. Sorry for that soapbox moment there, right? But I feel like that's got to be said.
Can we talk about the argument over facts? Does that worry you? As legislators, there has been a lot of discussion about the fact that if you don't have a common pool of information from which to draw, you may have completely different goals, completely different interpretations. But if you don't share the same facts, the entire project of democracy goes down, because democracy is about debate, compromise, reaching consensus or conceding defeat, but it all works from the same pool of information. If we don't have that, do you think that that threatens the process of democracy? It just becomes a kind of law of the jungle, the person who yells loudest wins kind of thing. Will?
I agree with that. You have to have some common agreement on the facts, right? But I think where sometimes things diverge is what is the impact that fact may or may not have on a population or a group. And I think that is where a lot of times the conversations get focused on.
Can you give me an example of that?
Donald Trump said something, you know, is tweeting about the Golden State Warriors. Right? But is that going to lead to the downfall of society? No. What we should be talking about is that Iran tested a missile yesterday, and there has been very little coverage of that, and there's more coverage about what the President of the United States is saying about the NFL and the NBA. Now, it's on both sides. I think the president should be talking about the fact that there was a missile launch in Iran the other day versus talking about the NFL or the NBA. So I think both sides need to focus on that. My point is, yes, the fact is that he said those things, but what impact does that have?
Where did you hear about the Iranian missile going off?
Absolutely, from the press. And that's why I say I think the press is important, right? I'm of the opinion that we need a free and fair press that is willing to shine a light on corners. I think a press keeps elected officials honest. I wish more districts were like mine, that is 50-50, where you have to have conversations. It forces you to have conversations. You cannot hide. And so if more districts were like that, I think we would be at a better place in our society. So I am a firm supporter. Look, I'm never going to say that any individual media outlet is fake news because they play such an important role in our society.
Well, some news outlets are fake news.
Let me give you an example. Donald Trump and his proposal to build a 2,000-mile wall and his vilification of Mexican immigrants doesn't come out of a vacuum, right? Folks for many years have been describing the border as a war zone, as a place that is unsafe, as a source for those threats against which we must be secured. When you look at the facts, the border has never been safer than it is today. And cities like El Paso and those that Will represents along the Texas-Mexico border are far safer than the average American city in the interior. And that safety is in part connected to the fact that we are communities of immigrants and that we are joined at the hip with Mexico. But there have been stories after stories after stories about terrorists crossing the border. Judicial Watch, one of these fringe, I don't know if you want to call it fake news, but doesn't traffic in the facts, talks about an ISIS training camp in Ciudad Juarez, Chihuahua. Does anyone believe that there would be an ISIS training camp across the border from El Paso in Juarez and that we just wouldn't do anything about it?
In the middle of the desert,
we wouldn't know. And yet, here's the sad truth. People do believe that, and it begins to form the perception held by too many Americans about the danger that the border poses. And so instead of capitalizing on what we have to build on at the U.S.-Mexico border, trade, jobs, tourism, culture, we're seriously moving forward on a 2,000-mile wall that we don't need. Sometimes it is.
Are we? I mean, the wall isn't.
There are 600-plus miles of walls and fencing already. If you go down to the Santa Ana Wildlife Refuge near McAllen, Texas, where you have hundreds of acres of beautiful, pristine Rio Grande wilderness, we're about to lose that forever. They are already driving the stakes into the levee wall
for
there.
For Trump's wall?
For a wall that will be built during the Trump administration. Mm-hmm.
So several $1 million was reprogrammed under the last 2017 budget for prototype wall. Well, considering building walls have been around since like the 3rd century, I don't know why we need a prototype. But a lot of that is in the San Diego region. The $1.5 billion that was in the president's budget that was requested, it has not been, though he also requested 1.5 in that 2017 supplemental that wasn't included. There was $1.5 billion included in the House budget that was passed recently, but it's unlikely that the Senate would agree to that. So we'll see. We still got to keep fighting.
But we got a lot of walls still.
We have 650 miles of fencing existing on the 2,000 miles of border.
We got some facts. So it is possible to go back to a time where facts matter again. But what do you do in the meantime? I mean, when you're in Washington and there's a rush away from them or a denial of them. I mean, what do you do?
Well, I think this is this issue, and where I've spent time looking at this issue is when it comes to Russian disinformation. How are Russian intelligence services using existing platforms to deliver a payload with the goal of misinformation? And ultimately, the United States, we do not have a counter covert information strategy. I've spent time in Eastern Europe recently, and I've learned the closer you are to Russia, the less likely you are to believe their nonsense. But the converse of that is true as well. The farther away you are, the more susceptible you are to it. And so that's why our liberal institutions have to be strong. That's why we have to have a strong press to refute facts when they are injected into conversations about things like national security, or you pick that particular topic.
I completely agree. I just wonder about our problems much closer to home of really effective disinformation.
Yeah, it's gotten so bad that you have people marching in the streets of America for science. Something that you thought was resolved after the Enlightenment is still apparently up for debate today in 2017. And so, yeah, you're absolutely right, Brooke. It's a challenge when people who are working within the same institution do not accept the same basic premise or set of facts that will allow them to reach a common goal. And that happens when it comes to the environment, when it happens to the impacts of man-made caused climate change. Just to give you one example that has people taken to the streets today, holding up placards that just say the word science. But here's, for me, the silver lining. People are willing to get out in the streets and hold up placards that say science. They're fighting for this because they see everything on the line right now. They know it is at stake, that if their representative isn't going to accept the commonly held facts surrounding this, they're going to force the issue, or they're going to elect somebody else to represent their interests.
One doesn't necessarily lead to the other, as we've seen. There was a famous case of a demonstration post-Trump in Los Angeles that clogged the streets with some huge number, I can't remember precisely, but about 1/20th of them came out and voted in a provisional election. Demonstrating in the streets, sadly, does not lead to voting necessarily.
I had an experience here in Austin at South by Southwest that was a great analogy on this. I was on a panel with a number of YouTube stars. No, I didn't know the names of any of these YouTube stars, but the combined reach was about a billion. And one of the women on the stage was the digital director for The Rock, Dwayne Johnson. And this was right when the movie Moana was coming out. It's a cartoon that The Rock was in. And she said, if Moana fails at the box office, who do you blame? Moviegoers, or do you say it was a bad movie? And it's like, you could say it was a bad movie. But when it comes to politics, we want to blame the voter. And my point is, if you're running for office or you're in elected office, you should be delivering a product that wants people to come out and pull that lever.
And Trump did that.
I think Trump did that. I think President Obama did that. I think you have a number of examples that you have to make sure you're getting folks out, and it's up to us as the candidate or the elected official to do that.
Again, I just want to get back to this issue of facts inside the Beltway. We heard Al Franken inaugurate this festival talking about his across the aisle negotiation with, you know, a lot of people to actually fix the insurance markets and to shore up the Affordable Care Act programs. And it was shut down by Mitch McConnell, who decided that this kind of compromise would not be useful, presumably politically, since it seemed to be working on a policy level as they were getting to it. I mean, do you think that you can start to rebuild that common pool of facts between the parties with more bipartisan work? I mean, have you guys worked together on bills?
Yeah, of course. But yeah, look, it's hard for me to talk about this in abstract. You got to get to an individual's particular topic, and when are you talking about the facts? I think the GAO is a great resource that does a lot when it comes to things that are happening within the government. And so I think on an individual level, when you're talking with your colleagues, that there is an acceptance of the premise of whatever the argument you're trying to make. Now,
the president will say, the CBO is a liar unless the CBO comes up with a number that he likes. He has taken away money from data gathering, from obviously from the EPA, from the Centers for Disease Control. He's starving them of funds. He is discrediting those that are currently working that the Congress have, as a body, agreed to rely on for a very long time. He has basically said that any data gathering organization is essentially following an agenda because they might, in their conclusions, disagree with the direction he wants to go. Yeah. How does a president who basically seeks to disable or disenfranchise or discredit all forms of information dissemination, starting with the institution of a free press, but then filtering out to all those other areas. How do you deal with that? Do you feel you need to deal with that?
There are countless examples of how the president, and I would agree, should not have cut some of these things when it comes to data, but Congress puts that money back into those agencies. That's our responsibility, and that's how Congress should use the power of the purse as a check and balance against any chief executive. And oftentimes, those efforts are not reported. And so there are those that do believe in facts, that do believe in science, that do believe in data gathering, and making sure that we're supporting that when it comes to budgets.
And if I could just conclude with the example you gave us, the Congressional Budget Office, or the CBO, is a nonpartisan, independent authority on the factual implications of proposed legislation. And when the CBO says that a given repeal and replace effort for the Affordable Care Act will result in 30 to 32 million Americans losing their insurance, their ability to see a doctor, their ability to stay well, perhaps even to live, and then because certain lawmakers don't like the conclusion that independent authority has reached and cast doubt on not just that, but any score from the CBO going forward, so that they move the legislation to the floor of the Senate without a CBO score, what is the average American supposed to think? There's no longer a fixed, agreed upon point from which we can draw conclusions. They may be different conclusions, but at least we're working from the same facts. I think this is an incredibly dangerous precedent that has been set by the leadership in the House and the Senate right now, and by the president as well, but it's not just limited to him. I think we need to get back to agreeing on the facts, and then let's draw different conclusions if we'd like to. But I think the concern that you raise is a very real one, and it's going to be difficult for us to move forward on legislation, healthcare, jobs, immigration, or otherwise, if we can't agree on the facts to begin with.
But you also have to be mindful that projections and activity in the past are two different things. That when you make projections, that comes with certain assumptions. And so if you change those assumptions, the projections will be different. And I can use a specific example for me when it comes to CBO. Same piece of legislation last Congress that I was passing or working on, it was an IT procurement bill, was said it was going to cost $9 billion. And the same bill this year, they said it was going to cost $500 million. And so this was a projection on what they thought this was going to be.
I get that about projections, and I know that we have to go. I just wonder, I mean, the degree of distress over this issue seems to be greater in Beto than it is in you. And I wonder, you know, I shouldn't assume, but right now a lot of the fact blocking is happening on the level of the White House and of the congressional leadership, which is Republican. Are facts a political issue?
No, facts are not a political issue, but projections make assumptions,
right?
As we said. You've made an assumption about my opinion based on a short conversation that you and I have, and you thought that was based on fact, just on the things that I was responding to you.
I was just saying you were evincing a lower level of distress. Yeah. I was making an observation. I was asking you to respond to that.
What needs to happen is amongst policymakers in Washington, D.C., we have to build trust amongst ourselves. That's why I think more members of Congress from opposite parties should drive in a car together. I think members...
I should say to listeners who don't know, the two of you went on a road trip, really got to know each other.
Right, and so you build trust amongst each other, right? And that is how we're going to make sure that we're focused on more things that unite us than what actually divides us. That is the behavior that we need to demand in our elected officials, and that Beto and my colleagues should be doing up in Washington, D.C., so that the trust the American peoples have in their institutions gets repaired. And it starts with us being willing to work together, transcend DNR, and focus on those things that Americans care about.
Okay, Congressman Will Hurd, Congressman Beto O'Rourke. Thank you.
Thanks for having us on. Thank you. Yeah.
Come on and dance the Texas polka. I want to hear the fiddle play.
This podcast was recorded at the 2017 Texas Tribune Festival. To hear more stuff from the festival, go to texastribune.org. And while I have you here, another reminder to sign up for our weekly newsletter. It's informative, fun, and seriously surreal. Also, tune in for this week's show. I speak to a reporter from Mexico City who has a story about earthquakes and the delusions they inspire. On Friday, I'm Brooke Gladstone.
Never think of working hard. There's lots of oil in the backyard of every house that stands in Texas. You'll find a place in our fair state with lots of space, and it's all great from Tennessee to San Antonio. I know an Indian made a woody come to Texas if he could, and just to do the Texas polka.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Jeffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at the New Yorker. So join us every week on the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.